Good afternoon. Welcome to this edition of the Richard Urban Show. Thanks for joining us. Today, very happy to have Joe Early on again. He was a primary candidate, a Republican candidate for the 2nd Congressional District. Yes. So we're really happy to have him on to talk about strengthening families and communities. And I'd like to share a few thoughts on that and proposals, really. And then let's talk about that, because I think that is so crucial, you know, for our whole society. So if it's okay, I'll go ahead and share my screen here.
Okay, yeah, looking forward to it.
Premise: to break the generational cycle of outside of wedlock birth, we need a revolution of abstinence-centered education. Parents should present the expectation of sexual abstinence before marriage to their children, regardless of whether or not they abstain themselves. They should think about what is best for their children's future and speak honestly about their own situation. School and community-based programs such as Urban Life Training can back up parents in making this revolution. In one generation, this can break the cycle of outside of wedlock births and all of the related personal and societal consequences. So we see here that 47% of children in West Virginia are born outside of marriage. We see how it's increased over time from like maybe 5 to 10% up until like the early 70s, and now it's 47%. So teaching sexual abstinence before marriage is integrally related to creating a safe and healthy environment for our children. So this slide shows that there's a great concern about, you know, what kind of sexual health education and generally what children are being taught. So here we're talking about high school students. So basically in ninth grade, when our children enter high school, I'm talking about, of course, public schools here. Uh-huh. So 2 in 10 students have had sexual intercourse. This is a national average, but it holds up, you know, pretty much across, you know, all the states. But once they graduate, 6 in 10 students have had sexual intercourse. So as a parent, I mean, my daughter's married now, son is not, but he's graduated. But any parent, that's extremely concerning. What's going on in high school that, you know, a majority of students are becoming sexually active by the time they graduate? Obviously, that's very concerning. So our mission at Urban Life Training, our full name is Urban Life Training Reality Assessment Teen Choice. Urban Life Training raises youth leaders to develop good character and to model and teach about the benefits of sexual abstinence in preparation for marriage and successful family formation. We provide directive abstinence-centered health education through our community network of trained parents and community leaders. Urban Life Training chapters carry out the Urban Life Training mission in their local areas. Now, this is quote from The Family Rooted in Absolute Sexual Ethics, which is a model for God's absoluteness, peace, and ideal in the global kingdom. And this is a speech by Reverend Sun Myung Moon. Respective leaders from around the world, what do you think is God's ultimate purpose for creating human beings? It is experience joy through laying with ideal families filled with true love. What does an ideal family look like? When God first created human beings, he made Adam representing all men and Eve representing all women, with the intention they become owners of true love. Then what was the quickest way for them to cultivate a character of true love? Simply put, it was to secure a parent-child relationship with God, whereby they could live in attendance of God as their father and form a model family embodying God's ideal of peace. They were to have followed the path of living as one family with God, experiencing joy eternally. God created Adam and Eve and installed them as the first ancestors of humankind to form the model family and establish the ideal of peace. He committed himself completely to raising them as his son and daughter, who were to be encapsulations of the entire cosmos, mediators between the spiritual and physical worlds, and lords of creation, and who would be joined with him through true love, true life, true lineage. Ladies and gentlemen, it was necessary for Adam and Eve to establish a model ideal family of peace. God, the absolute being, created human beings as his children. in order to instill in them absolute values on a basis of an absolute standard. Thus, human beings must follow the way of that absolute standard in keeping with the demands of the heavenly path. This means we must follow our destined life course in order to attend God, the absolute being, as our parent. In other words, for people to perfect themselves in resemblance of God and obtain the stature of people of character, who can be called sons and daughters of the absolute being, they must follow the path based on the absolute standard God has determined. The essence of this path is the standard of absolute sexual purity. The first stage is maintain absolute sexual purity prior to getting married. After we are born, we go through a process of growth. We pass through infancy and childhood in a very safe and secure environment, embraced in our parents' love and protection. We then enter the time of adolescence, which signals the start of a new and dynamic life as we forge relationships on a totally new level with those around us, as well as with all things of creation. This is a moment when we begin to travel the path to becoming an absolute human being, internally through the perfection of our character and externally by reaching adulthood. Yet at this time, there is an absolute requirement that people must fulfill, no matter who they are. This is a requirement of maintaining their purity, which is the model of absolute sexual morality for human beings. God gave it to his children as their destined responsibility and duty to be carried out in order to fulfill the ideal of creation. This heavenly path is thus the way for perfecting the model of absoluteness and conjugal love. So this is what we call the success formula, which we share in our program, like with the students. To avoid poverty, graduate from high school, get a full-time job, and wait until 21 and married before having children. So if you follow these rules, there's only a 2% chance that you'll live in poverty. But if you follow none of these rules, then there's a 74% chance. So that's quite striking.
Yes.
Difference there. So I see a two-tiered solution to the problem of family breakdown. First, teach sexual abstinence before marriage and fidelity within marriage to our children. I think you have to break this cycle. Without doing that, I don't see how you're going to break the cycle. Anyway, I believe this is the way to do it. Anyway, that's what we're going to be discussing. Two, okay. One of the main things, create a movement of marriage as God-centered. Unionstation.love is a matching site where singles who practice sexual abstinence before marriage or who have returned to sexual abstinence before marriage can find a marriage partner. And Unionstation.love is a project of Urban Life Training. It's up and running now. We've just recently opened it so people can take a Blessing of Marriage preparation course. Then they can get on the site and prayerfully find their eternal partner. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's exciting. Be the one, find the one. And then I think that's all I want to share now. I'll go back to the action steps at the end. I think okay. We should. And I was kind of delinquent here. So I said, I'm the host, but this is my co-host, Stacy, my lovely wife.
Hello, Stacy. How are you?
How are you doing, love?
Great.
Okay. All right. Amen. So, yeah. So, I mean, any like thoughts on that proposal? Or just, you know, if you have a particular points you want to share or feel free, you know, at this time, I'd love to hear your, like, feedback on this proposal.
Well, I tell you, I mean, you hit some good metrics on there when you talk about, you know, and I have to go back and look at the slide again, which is the 20% and the 60%.
Yeah.
You know, at ninth graders, and then let's see, the ninth graders at 20%. So that's 2 in 10.
Right.
And then 2 in 10 after being a senior in high school that are engaged in, I guess you could say what I'm saying is premarital sex.
Right.
It's funny you mentioned that statistic. Because I was talking with someone the other day, and he was the owner of a restaurant, and he informed me that he was speaking to one of his waitresses, and she is not even of the age of 21 yet, and has had over 50 sexual partners.
Holy cow! And I'm almost would be in disbelief. That's crazy. I mean, I don't want to pass judgment, but I mean, you have to judge to say that's crazy. But go ahead.
But that is just one person that is a potential indicator of a larger problem in our society. And I would say it's probably unique to the American culture or Western culture more than it is anywhere else. And even though we're a God-centered culture, back in the, you know, as your timeline shows, early 50s up to present day, as the percentages increase, is as our society has changed and has become more liberal, the morals, there's been some moral decay. And with that moral decay becomes the thought process of what I would call moral relativism. Do what feels good, you know, and it's whatever I want is what makes me happy, then that's what I'm going to do. And you see that right now, even though that there are pharmaceutical type prophylactics, you know, condoms, things of that matter.
Yeah.
And we're talking about those who are in that 20%, 60% range. So we're talking about not just premarital sex, but we're talking the downstream impacts of premarital pregnancies, you know, children that potentially have that 74% that did not wait till they're 21 years old. So there's a lot of, it's a pretty complex issue, but I think that it's the big thing is we have a societal problem that feeds that free will. You know, God gave us free will to choose. And, you know, we as a society have went down a road of moral relativism, and a large segment of our society is falling prey to that. And you add in technology with the social media and the living out other people's lives through social media and then acting that out all for a click or, you know, view on Instagram or Facebook, I think exacerbates the problem. We have to look at that. So there's a lot of things that, yeah, education, I think, is the core. And I think I read that in there without you saying it, is education, educating young teenagers or young people at the earliest stage of adolescence is paramount to, addressing this issue. However, we have to curb the access through the internet. And I am a firm believer that we need legislators in the state, legislators at the federal level, and elected officials need to address this problem of the internet and looking at the virtual world mimicking the physical world. For example, a 10-year-old child or 14-year-old child or 17-year-old child or adolescent cannot walk into a store or a bar or something that sells adult content. There are laws against that. As a matter of fact, the retailers who operate those establishments are held to that as a preventive measure, i.e. punitively they can be fined or their business could be shut down if they allow that in the physical world for those things to occur. But right. we need to adopt that same process in the virtual world.
Mm.
And the internet service providers have to be held accountable to, when I walk out the door on the internet, meaning I open up a browser in my home, that anything that is adult content should not be accessible unless I choose to walk into that store, meaning right. that I go to that website. But I have to be permitted to go to that website. So what I'm inferring here is, and actually stating, is the internet service providers, whether it's CityNet in our area, CityNet, Spectrum,
Comcast,
Comcast, they need to be, as a provider of services to the public, even if it's a paid service, that they should include an opt-in function. Okay. so that if you have teenagers in your home, then you, as the parent, have to opt into a service that provides the IS, that tells that ISP that adult content is authorized in my home, or adult content is authorized on my phones, and the consumer should not have to pay extra for that preventive measure.
That's a good, I know there's, let me interject one thing. I know some states have passed laws, not, that's really good, that's more comprehensive, but I know they have successfully passed laws to make the pornography sites require sign-on verification of age. I know that like Pornhub or whatever, I think that's what it's called, you know, they decided in those states just to shut it down. Yeah. So I think you're right. I mean, that's, of course, not nearly as comprehensive what you're saying, but that's the same idea, right?
Well, it's just like, you know, the ISPs have to be seen as a retailer of service.
Mm-hmm.
They're consumer based, and that I as a consumer am providing that. I mean, look, and I don't want to classify them as a utility because they're not. They are a private sector service. However, most of the ones here in West Virginia fall underneath the subsidies for their congressional funds and state level funds to provide internet to our more rural areas.
Okay.
Well, the tags should come with that. Prohibitive tags should come with that. Is if you're going to provide internet service, you have to prohibit material unless the consumer wants that material. Just because you subscribe to the internet doesn't mean that the whole dam lets loose. You can't do that because, you know, it's they're purveyors of information, and they have to without interfering with the First Amendment rights of an American citizen, they still have an obligation to curtail exposure to adult contents to youth. And look at it to say how many youth, and I don't know the statistics behind this, but I'm going to take an educated guess that about over 60% of America's youth at the age of 13 or 14 years old has a mobile device that's internet capable. As that device is internet capable, that they are exposed to the social impacts and the social influence through social media to all of these things that your proposed educational approach is trying to curtail, such as they think that just because they see it on the internet that they should, that it's okay for them to engage in that kind of premarital sex. Matter of fact, because that's what the message is. It's all about sexualizing and over-sexualizing, hyper-sexualizing children nowadays.
Yeah. To interject one thing, yes, I'm on the page with it, definitely. What about things that cut both ways in the sense that, like, you know, we've seen, like, the ban TikTok movement, and then the other hand, President Trump and Charlie Kirk have gone on TikTok and have millions or tens of millions of followers. Not TikTok. It shows I don't use it. TikTok. But anyway, the point being, some of it could be good, but there's a lot of recruitment of transsexual stuff and all kinds of garbage. How can you like have freedom of access but yet filter out? I'm not, you know what I mean?
Well, these companies that make these applications, I'm a cybersecurity person. I work in that profession, and I will tell you, all of these applications that have these algorithms are human made. They're not, or through generative AI that is also human made. So we have the ability to filter that.
Okay.
If a person is not over the age of 18, considered an adult in our society, right? Then their access to the internet is unlimited. However, like I said, we have to look at it from a physical world, virtual world. Those that are 17 years old cannot go into an adult establishment that sells pornography, that has professional dancers or strippers, whatever you want.
You're right. And you know,
alcohol. So the virtual world and the laws that impact society at the physical world should also impact the virtual world as well. Meaning that a 17-year-old cannot go out here into an adult content store. Therefore, in a virtual world, they should be held to the same standard.
Yeah. And, you know, I know that even people like YouTube, they make you mark your content if it's adult content. And, well, they make you mark it. And, of course, they could use, I suppose, AI, although it might not work totally, to at least, you know, with the high, what do you say, advanced technology like nude images and stuff, they should be able to recognize that and strip it out.
Oh, absolutely. And not just strip it out, prohibit that from being seen by a person who has a device that's registered to a person who is under the age of 18 years.
Well, I meant strip it. I didn't mean like cover it up.
But I mean, it's just saying, but yeah. I mean, I go back to my days. I grew up in the 60s, early 70s, and I would tell you that, you know, the worst thing that we had out there at that point in time was maybe Playboy or Penthouse. But when you walked into a store as a child, those were behind the counter,
right?
And they were covered. And you were not allowed back there. The store people, the people, the retailer, the employees of the store would not allow you back there. So why are we not enforcing that in the virtual world as well?
That's a good idea. So do we have anything like that in West Virginia now?
Not to my knowledge. And I think that that was going to be one of my pursuits for legislation in Congress. And I still believe that it's something that could be done because it, from a cost perspective, it's not going to add a lot of overhead cost to the internet service providers to turn it off at the spigot. I mean, they turn it off and then allow the consumer to opt into that. So if I go out as a parent and I buy my child a phone, I am attesting that child is over 18 years old, okay? Or it's a child that's over 18 years old. But if I'm also saying that if it is a child that's not 18, then the onus is on the consumer, the retailer, that they cannot sell that device, meaning the services associated with that device as well, that expose the children to adult content that is expressly forbidden or has codified law against it or policies against it from a business perspective.
Yeah. So do you think... Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead. That's fine.
Do you think access... So I was thinking myself, our daughter's a little older. She's like 34. So when she had a phone, I didn't give her one until she graduated high school. And anyway, that was a little before they started having all the smartphone stuff. Point being, like some people think, you know, kids shouldn't get a phone until they're at least 16. Are you saying maybe 18, or do you have a specific idea?
I think that's up to the parents. That's a parent's responsibility.
Right.
Now, if it's an Obama phone, which I still think that those are in existence, meaning people get free phones at the expense of the taxpayer, but it's not really a free phone. It's just free to them. It costs the taxpayer money. Anything that's provided by the taxpayer should also have those same level of restrictions to children that are in a household. So no, I'm not saying age restricting to the technology. I'm saying age restricted access to adult content that the internet service providers or the commercial side of it, they turn off that access and require the parent, not the child, require the parent or the responsible adult to opt in to anything that's adult related. Right now, you can go to AT&T. Now, my kids are grown, so I don't have to worry about it now, and I don't know how times have changed with it. But I do know that when my kids were growing up, AT&T required me to pay additional money on top of my plan to turn off access to certain material. That should not, I mean, that would be the equivalent, like I said, and I don't want to align this with the utility, but that would be the equivalent to the cleanliness of the water I get. I either pay more to get cleaner water or higher amperage electricity. You know, I'm going to pay more for it than a person who can't afford that. So, right. But a lot of parents may not, and I don't mean this to be an insulting phrase, what I'm getting ready to say, but there should be trust between the parent and child relationship. And in order to establish that trust, sometimes the parent has to enforce things and enforce them on restrictive behaviors, restrict them from going into a retail store that sells pornography. Well, not just the parent's going to say, Sally or John, you're not allowed in that store, and this is why. Well, the retailer also has the same responsibility to deny entry as well. So we have to take a multifaceted approach. That's why I say it's a little bit more of a societal issue. But that's just one segment of this, and that's the social media, internet exposure to a lot of complex issues that you're trying to educate for abstinence below the age of 21, and especially at the high school and middle school level, where the experimentation is occurring, because now they're exposed to it through social media and access to
It's more like till marriage. I mean, but in the school, I think the best way to put it for school would be just like, and I think almost all parents would agree, you know, school-aged children should not be sexually active.
They should not be. I mean, I think most parents, I would say if you go up to any parent, they're going to say, what is your thoughts on your child becoming sexually active before the age of 15? And they would say, not going to happen. You know, they say, I want my child to succeed. I don't want to be a grandparent while my child is still going through school. You know, things of this manner. Say, you know, abstinence is the best method to you know, maintain the sanctity of the family around a God-centered life. That would be ideal. Unfortunately, we're battling a lot of moral decay in our society.
Yeah,
multifaceted, multi-vector moral decay.
That's true. I do want to take a minute to share, and we can continue discussing my action step slide. Is that okay?
Okay.
Yeah. So here's my action steps: become a member of Urban Life Training, so you'll gain access to all of our character and abstinence-centered education materials. So that would be good. And you can support us. It's $49 a year. We have a lot of materials there, all of our classroom materials, videos you can watch, you know, with your children or so on, trainings, how to do the program, all that. Form a chapter of Urban Life Training in your local area. So I want to do that, of course, here in Jefferson County, but everywhere would be good. The chapters carry out the work of doing this kind of education in schools or other places. Which is the next one, teach the Urban Life Training program and start a STAR Leadership Club. STAR means Students Teaching Abstinence Responsibility in your local middle or high school. And become a member of Union Station of Love. So that would be, of course, if you're single, to find your match. But also as a parent, you can assist your child in finding their eternal match. That could probably be a whole show, but I think parents should assist their children. I think that's an important step. Why not? It's, you know, what could be more important for your child's success, you know? In other words, work together on it.
Yes.
Receive marriage strengthening education, elevate your marriage, eternal blessed marriage. That's like for married couples can also join there too and take our marriage, blessed marriage course. And that's really good. The final thing is create a public awareness campaign by getting your local board of education to adopt the resolution for character and abstinence education. that's something we've created. And I want to present, I still want to need to do that here in Jefferson County, but it's stating that the standard for that Board of Education will be absence-centered education. And I think that's, of course, very important.
That bullet number four would be with the current adversarial relationships that the most boards of education take towards the public now, should I say the taxpayer,
right,
and the parents are probably one of the barriers to getting that implemented, because they would see that as a an encroachment on their rights as the Board of Education to administer education to the children. As we all well know, we can see on a daily basis where that has put us.
Yeah, I've met one of our Board of Education members, you know, said she was supportive. I didn't yet get a group of parents together, and that kind of gets to, because I don't want to only do it myself, to the idea of, like, we're encouraging people to, yeah, I've been doing this a while. I've personally, like, how do you say, educated about 3,000 youth, and then worked with about 200 students in clubs, mostly in D.C., because I used to live there till 8 years ago. So we worked East River, you know, with inner city kids, so to speak. But anyway, it'll benefit everyone. But point being, I found it challenging as a nonprofit leader over the years, and our nonprofit's been going since 2003, getting volunteers. We did have a good group of, like, college student volunteers. Maybe I've worked with a couple dozen, you know, like in D.C., and that's good. But overall, our model is decentralized. So we're looking for people to, like, take our training. They can do it online in their own time and really take this out to their local community. And like I said, it's decentralized effort. So if you know people like that, you can point them our way. Or what do you think? I mean, well, I feel that, you know, we've shown that the model works. Students benefit from it. Parents like it. Teachers like it. But we need more people to be involved and willing to do it. And I mean, it could also involve payment in the sense that, you know, local chapters can raise funds if they want to give stipends to their teachers and stuff, meaning the people who teach the program. Anyway, what do you think?
Well, I think it's a worthy goal. You had shown something in there. What is STAR? STAR.
Yeah, Students Teaching Absence Responsibility. So one of the big parts of the program that's popular is once we give some presentation in the classroom, we say, would you like to sign up for a club? And usually about 20% of the students say yes, and maybe 10% will actually come to the meetings. And then we train them to be peer counselors to help the other students understand why absence is important and do some activities like resisting peer pressure and learning to be assertive and things like that.
Well, I tell you what, that'd be good. I mean, just the idea of resisting peer pressure has a lot of residual positive impacts just outside of abstinence, but also encountering you know, someone saying, here, you know, try this drink or try this drug.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially as this world we're in right now, where fentanyl poisoning is running rampant and our state is taking a hard hit. We're the highest in the nation on drug overdoses.
Yeah. So that, I think that would go together. I mean, of course, we do emphasize, although we're not per se a drug prevention program, we do emphasize character and values.
Yes.
And we talk about quite a bit about not using substances, which would include marijuana. So we do actually talk a number of our slides in our program about that. And we talk about it, and also not using alcohol. And we have some activities. So along the same line, of course, any kind of substance, you know, affects your judgment and care. And of course, things like fentanyl can kill you as well. So, yeah.
So are you all actively promoting on a website?
Yeah, we have on our website. Yeah, it's urbanlifetraining.org. And we have a separate URL for our matching site, but it's linked there. But our character and absence education site is Urban Life Training.
It's Urban Life Training?
Yeah, .org. There we have, like, all of our absence and materials, and we have news. It says help you achieve success and happiness. You see, that was so you can join, like I said, it's $49 a year. You access all of our materials, and of course our chapters can access all those materials, and then they can, sometimes we have live trainings, but we have training recorded right in our membership area, so you can take the training right there. Then you can, all the materials are online. You could go down to your local school, middle, high school. Of course, you could do it at a church or anywhere else. And you could meet the principal and say, hey, you know, with the Urban Life Training, and we'd like to benefit the youth. Here's a, you know, show them a few of the materials. And if they're like a lot of principals, say, wow, this is great. And then you could go on in and teach the program to whoever, you know, most likely the principal, in my experience, will introduce you to some teacher who he or she thinks would be interested in that, and you'll be off and running, and you know, you'll be really happy to do it. It's very gratifying.
Yeah, I'm looking at some of your statistics.
Yeah, we got a lot of things here. That's some of the students we work with in middle school there. Yeah, you do fun activities like make posters and stuff. Oh, and yeah. we just have a lot of materials, a lot of activities, a lot of testimonies, things that can be used. I think the first step is just to realize, like we were talking about, that it's important, and to take the leap and, you know, go ahead and, you know, teach at your school. Maybe if you can pry out a couple hours a week from your schedule or more, you could get to the school and, you know, teach some young people and really make a difference.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you what I can do. I can help try to promote your site a little bit, but can't do it right now. But I'm right in the process of putting a few things together myself to post-primary life. I'm working hard, I guess you could say. But
yeah. Amen. Yeah. So that, I mean, yeah, we're looking like, yeah, like I said, that's great. And if you know in your local community, people who would be interested, you could point them toward that. And also you could become a member yourself to support and also gain access and check all our materials. Okay. And that would be great.
Okay. Well, I'll take a look at it. And, but yeah, so yeah, this has been good. I'll take a look at more detailed look at the site and everything, and see what we can map to.
Yeah. I was looking for a positive feedback, and also just to like, I mean, I keep saying it like a broken record, but it seems like to me, of course, I'm in the field and I've been doing it for a while, you know, common sense that this is what we have to do, but there's not enough discussion about it, and not just discussion, but action. And then the action is a lot of things that we do in society. They're necessary to a certain extent. Like, for instance, you know, there's a lot of emphasis on removing inappropriate books from your school library. And that's a good thing. But what are we doing to actually educate the youth on the right things? So we, you know, we have a proven model that, you know, it works. We can do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Removing the book is just one measure.
Right.
You know, access is another. There's a lot of activities. Because, you know, this is you and I will probably never see this in our generation, but we can make this change start to occur, but we may not see the impacts of it for two generations.
Because yeah, it's a generational thing. And like I'm saying, some people say the current generation coming up, whatever you call them, double A, I don't know. But anyway, the youngest generation is more conservative, meaning hopefully that they'll have these values, but they won't just automatically have the values. I mean, that's a good trend. We have to teach them. And like, you know, I worked in DC where many, 75% of the kids we work with or young adults, they were not from, you know, two parent homes, more than 75%. They can receive the message. They can say, like, you know, maybe some of the students say, oh, Mr. Urban, you know, they come from a family that, parents are not married. They don't know anybody who's married. And then, you know, but they think, oh, that's a good idea. Maybe I should abstain. So we got to give the youth at least minimally this option. You know what I mean? So it's on the table for them. And of course, parents should emphasize it, I believe.
Maybe it's good we can just kind of wrap it up with that then. And I'll take a look at it. And I appreciate you having me back on. It was great talking to you about this. Nice to meet your lovely wife.
Yes. Thank you for joining, Stacy.
Okay. Yeah.
You want to share anything else?
Make good families.
Yeah. Amen. Let's make good families. That's true. Okay. Well, thanks for joining us. Yeah. God bless you. And let's be in touch then.
Absolutely. Okay.
Okay. Well, thank you for joining us today.
Nice evening. And y'all take it easy and stay very safe in Jefferson County.
Okay. And thank you for everyone for joining us. Who's watching this? All right. Until next time.